This is the Cube Show on Demand. Listen live weekdays 6 to 10. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
It's that All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
You know, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God wants us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I.
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Oh, yeah, it's time for the Phone Restore Call of the Day, brought to you by our good friends at Phone Restore. Yeah, the dreaded spiderweb going across the screen, or is your computer not working quite right? Check out our friends at Phone Restore. Most repairs are done in less than 1 hour. That's pretty quick. You can check them out online at phonerestore.com or check them out live in person at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue. Cole, the Braves' winning ways were cooled a little bit thanks to a hot eighth inning for the San Francisco Giants, and this was the final call.
Here's the wind by Melanson, the 3-2 pitch. Ground ball hit to second. Panic has it, and his throw to first ends the game. A very disappointing loss for the Braves, and they can't put up a fight against Melanson in the ninth inning. Three ground ball outs, and the Giants take game two to square the series at a game apiece. Final score tonight, Giants 6, Braves 3.
And so the San Francisco Giants do get the win in Game 2. Game 3 is tonight on the Ump. Cover starts at 6:20. It's a four-game series. They'll also play tomorrow, which if you listen to the Tom Abraham show, you can have a chance to win tickets to it today. And now we'll welcome in from the Braves Radio Network, Mr. Kevin McAlpin. Kevin, what's up, man?
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Doing good. Did you expect Brandon Belt to finish his 3-for-39 streak with a home run in the ninth inning?
You know what? He's tough, and this is a ball club, obviously, in the Giants. That's really, really scuffling here this season. They've had some injuries, but it's been hard to believe how bad the Giants have been. But yeah, you know what? Anytime Brandon Belt comes up, I don't care what the record is. I don't care what the standings are. He's a really, really dangerous hitter. So you always have to be careful with a guy like Brandon Belt.
Kevin, you look at the Giants, 5 runs in the top of the eighth for that comeback win last night. How big of a concern is the Braves bullpen moving forward?
Well, you know, I'm not really worried about the pen, I'll be honest with you. I think those guys have really started to establish some roles down there. You know, you've got, obviously, the eighth and ninth inning is pretty well covered with Biz and Jim Johnson. And then, you know, you've got guys like Ramirez who have found a spot in the seventh. You've got Kroll and Freeman who have come up with some big outs for you as well. So the pen really isn't as much of a concern as the defense has been. And we've seen this story a couple of times this year where the defense, you know, makes an error and then it turns into a 3-error inning. And next thing you know, it's a 5 or 6-run inning. It sort of reminded you a little bit of what we saw in that ball game to a lesser extent in Anaheim when Bartolo was cruising through the first couple of innings and then the defense hit 3 errors behind them, and they end up putting up 8 or 9 runs. So at the end of the day, I think that's where you really need to go out there. You need to catch the ball. You can't give teams extra outs, especially 6 outs in an inning, or else you're going to have what happened to you in the eighth inning last night.
It's a very similar – Kevin McAlpin of the Braves Radio Network with us. Very similar discussion to what we had with you so oftentimes last year, and that is Julio Teheran, fantastic in a loss. 82 pitches through 7 scoreless innings. Only 3 hits, all singles, retired 13 of the last 14 that he saw. The guy's remarkable, and I'm beginning to believe that he's one of the more underrated pitchers in all of baseball.
Yeah, I agree. And look, you know, you talk about the numbers in the first couple of months for Julio and his drastic home and road split that are starting to come back to normal here now. You know, through 4 starts at home and 4 on the road, he had about a 10 ERA at home and about a 1.5 ERA on the road. Those are starting to come back to normal here, as we expected they would. But as far as Julio's concerned, you know, you look at what he did through 7 last night. pitch count was very economical. I was sitting there in the press box thinking, Julio's got a chance to go the distance here and maybe even get a shutout win and throw about 110 pitches. And then, of course, things just spiraled out of control in that eighth inning. But I like what we've seen. He's been on the attack a lot more with his fastball. And when he's able to go out there and attack and throw strike one, he becomes much more dangerous and with that slider that he can mix in. So big thing for Julio is going out there attacking, throwing strikes, and cutting down on the walks, again, which we've seen in these last three outings.
Kevin, I got a couple of roster update questions for you. One is that Bartolo Colon will not be starting tonight. He's going to stay on the DL with back tightness. What's the latest we have on him?
Well, Bartolo, was supposed to start tonight, and when he was throwing a side session a couple of days ago, his back started bothering him. And Brian Snitker said that he's going to remain on the DL. Braves will remain with a five-man staff, which is, they were looking at a six-man rotation at least for one or two times through when Bartolo came back. So they'll stay five-man rotation. Braves did have an off day last week, so everyone basically stays on normal rest now. Newcomb bumps up a day, and he goes tonight. So, it's an interesting question. Ben and I talked about this on Braves Wrap-Up last night. You wonder if we do see Bartolo in the rotation ever again, and I went so far as to say maybe we do not ever see Bartolo start a game for the Braves again. Whether he goes to the bullpen when he comes back or whether the Braves look to trade or move on, we'll see what happens long-term. But I think we may have seen the last of Bartolo in the Braves rotation this year.
Wow. Wow, that would be some kind of something, expecting what some at least fans were hoping for Bartolo this year. I also noticed that Matt Adams is, we talked about him last week and the week before, I think, too, is having a great June and a pretty darn good stretch since he's been up playing first for Freddie Freeman. But I also saw a report yesterday that Freddie Freeman said that he would be willing to play third base if the Braves needed, if that was best for the Braves when he comes back. I know we're still 5-6 weeks away from him coming back, but do you think that's a possibility?
Well, I do. And, Freddie did play third base in high school, so I think it's a possibility. Now, it's been 10 or 11 years since he's gone out there and played it in a game, and obviously in a big league game, it's a much different ballgame, no pun intended. But, look, there's plenty of time between now and when Freddie comes back for him to go out there and work and play some games in the minors and get reps at third base. Look, everyone's been trying to figure out how can they keep Matt Adams' bat in the lineup when Freddie comes back. And really, your options are first base and maybe a little bit of left field. I think left field you can rule out pretty quickly because Matt Kemp's got that thing under control pretty well. So I think right now your most realistic options when Freddie Freeman comes back are, A, you trade Matt Adams and get a call back maybe from an American League team that could use a DH slash guy that can play the field a little bit. B, you keep him around and you try to figure out another position for somebody else, which is what has been talked about. We'll get a little more clarity on that today. I think I do expect to have a chance to visit with Freddie Freeman when the clubhouse opens this afternoon, so stay tuned for that. Maybe we get a little more information as far as what Freddie's thinking and what the organization could be thinking if they do go that route. And then the third option with Matt Adams is when Freeman comes back, he goes back to his role coming off the bench, and he said when he got traded here, he understands that that could be part of it, that Freddie's got first base under control. So there's really only three options, and I think, of the three, the most favorable as far as an offense is concerned is trying to figure out where you can move somebody else. And right now it sounds like that guy could potentially be Freddie Freeman moving, or at least trying to make the move over to third base.
I want to ask you about the newest arm to the starting lineup. Sean Newcomb, I think, had his second start over the weekend and pitched pretty well. It was pitched a little bit better than he did in his first start, but neither one have been really terrible, at least as far as I thought. What is Sean Newcomb's upside, and do you think he's up for the majors for the rest of the year, or just a few more starts, or do you think he has a chance to crack this lineup for the rest of 2017?
Well, I think what we've seen from him in his first two starts, I think Schmidt said it best after his first one. He said, maybe this guy's been pitching in the wrong league for the last little while. So I think that goes to tell you that Duke is here to stay. Now, who knows? If he has a couple of rough outings in a row, maybe you send him down to work on some things. But I think, the Braves have talked so much about young players telling you when they're ready by their numbers and their performance on the field. Well, I think you look at his last eight starts before he came up here to the big leagues, and he was certainly doing that. So I think the big thing with Duke is fastball command. That there were times in the minors where you really struggled and you'd see four, five, six walks in an outing. You can't do that here in the big leagues, but I think what he's shown in two starts, and we'll get a chance to see him again tonight, which I know a lot of fans are really excited about. He's shown that he belongs here in the big leagues. He looks the part. He looks like almost reminds you of a young John Lester when he's on the mound. So I think that, you know, as long as he continues to go out there and show signs that, you know, he's not regressing, I think we'll see him here. Potentially could see him here for the long haul.
Kevin, great stuff. Always appreciate catching up with you, talking some Atlanta Braves. Look forward to having you back next week.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Kevin McAlpin of the Braves Radio Network. Follow him on Twitter at Kevin McAlpin. So finding a way to keep Adams and Freeman, both those bats in the lineup, will be a bit of a chore for Brian Snicker moving forward, but something I think that this offense probably needs.
Yeah, I think Adams has 11 or 12 home runs now, and obviously Freddie was playing at NL MVP pace last year and even to start this year before he got hurt. It's just, I don't know, see a guy come in and play a position he hasn't played in 12 years? I mean, I guess, you know, third base may not be the most difficult position, I would guess, but I don't know. The Braves aren't great this year, but they're not playing bad basketball. Well,
they're
bad baseball.
They're not as bad as they were last year, for
no,
sure.
No, they've definitely improved, and most of that's the asphalt around the parking in the SunTrust Park, as you read earlier on the show. But they've really made some nice additions to the lineup, and it's just the Nationals are so hot right now. It's hard to really catch any ground. Plus, if you give up five runs in the top of the eighth, it's going to hurt your cause, chance to win.
Yes.
But game three of that series is tonight on the Ump, starting at 6:20.
Let's get the 10 after tweets now, brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
All right, we'll get to some of this and continue to discuss it a little bit later. But I want to cover some of this. SB Nation tweets, the Hornets obviously traded for Dwight Howard for this incredible skill set. Emoticon, crying face. There's a quote listed in a photograph of Glenn Davis at Glenn Big Baby Davis. He's a great farter. He can fart. He can fart loud.
Whoa.
The loudest farts. Silent farts. That's discussing Dwight Howard.
Get your sabermetrics on that.
So Adrian Wojnarowski tweets, sources, Charlotte is sending Miles Plumlee, Marco Bellinelli, and 41st pick to Atlanta for Dwight Howard and 31st pick.
A couple things. First, I think it's hilarious this happens in the offseason where he says he's going to add the three-pointer to his game.
goodbye.
I think it's just great. Secondly, there was a tweet from Dwight Howard. Let me read this tweet. This comes at 8:55 p.m. last night. I think it's Eastern time. Okay, Twitter fans, give me your thoughts, trades or otherwise, remember to be nice. That's what he tweets. Mark J. Spears from ESPN tweets, literally 5 minutes later, the Atlanta Hawks have agreed to trade center Dwight Howard to the Charlotte Bobcats, sources tell the Undefeated. Literally 5 minutes after Dwight Howard's like, all right, be nice, let's talk about some trades. Mark Spears is like, oh, well, you're being traded.
Unbelievable.
Literally 5 minutes, which is so great. He had no idea it was coming. This whole offseason is like, I'm going to add a three-pointer to my game. Hey, guys, talk to me about your trades. And the Hawks are like, you're gonna put three-pointers to your game? Yeah, I don't think so. Enjoy Charlotte. It's a lovely city. Speaking of that, by the way, David Aldridge, D. Aldridge TNT, tweets, per source, Jimmy Butler has informed the Cavaliers that he wants to stay in Chicago rather than be traded to Cleveland.
So, some big NBA news coming down yesterday as we approach the draft tomorrow night. Listen, some of these guys have roots in certain places. Some of these guys maybe enjoy the city that they live in. Some of these guys maybe have families. Maybe have their kids in school. Maybe have friends and like where they live, like their house, like their neighborhood, other than just being a professional basketball player. Maybe he likes the city of Chicago and realizes he can live there 365 days a year, as opposed to some guys who play basketball in Minnesota and live in South Beach, whatever.
Or maybe he knows LeBron won't be there the year after next. and says, probably not worth it for me.
Speaking of that, Jason McIntyre tweets, at Jason McIntyre, 12 hours ago, Lakers clearing cap room for LeBron. Kyrie allegedly texting players he, quote, might be willing to push for a trade. So what is this now? LeBron and Kyrie are colluding to both end up playing for the Lakers?
You know, there have been so many.
Let me just say.
There's so many. Who's going? So there's so many. This player clearly wants to go to the Lakers moves, which is interesting.
But of everything that we've discussed and the formation of super teams and all this movement around and apparent colluding that's happening, going to the West is not your best option. At least staying in the East, you get a shot at the Warriors in the finals. Going to the West is not increasing your chances to win a championship at all.
Hey, can I just... By the way, I 100% agree with you. The West seems to be the hardest place to get through. But can I just say this? Can I just try to dispel the myth that LeBron James tried to start the super teams? Do we not remember that Karl Malone and Gary Payton once went to the Lakers at the same time to try to win a championship? Like, it's happened before. I know under this sort of CBA, and we always like to look at something that just happened as the newness, but this has happened before.
So apparently...
Super teams are going to be everywhere every year.
Yeah, apparently Kyrie is texting former Team USA teammates about getting out because he believes that the writing's on the wall and LeBron is leaving in 2018. Why would, if the Cavs find a way to, I guess, rent Paul George this coming up season, there are people who say that that immediately leads them to believe that LeBron is out in 18. Well, 18, 19, not 17, 18.
Right. Well, here's the thing.
I don't understand why that is a determining factor in that LeBron is definitely leaving.
No, but you have all the stupid stuff. Like, he hates Dan Gilbert, the owner. I mean, he's just got a professional-friendly relationship with him. His GM that he actually really likes and stood up for, even though he may have been the guy that said, these are the decisions, it would be cool if we can get these guys on the team, let's make it happen, he's gone. And if you're Dan Gilbert, the owner, and you want LeBron James to stay, why would you antagonize him like this? Knowing that he could go anywhere else, because he's done it before, if you want him to stay, why would you just keep poking the bear like that? It's such a dumb thing to do.
Yeah.
Your best player, the best player in the sport, you're saying it's not really a big deal for me if you stay.
Bama Zach tweets in, Arky, you went to Dreamland yesterday and no ribs?
This is the first chance I get to defend myself. I had a rib. Cole gave me a rib.
This is not a rib. Arky did not order them.
I did not order the ribs myself. Mainly because everybody but Tom Abraham, who got chicken tenders, got ribs, and I was just eventually going to ask for one of your guys'. I was, but Cole graciously threw one on my plate before I had the chance to ask, and I'm grateful for that because those are nummy. Sad part is I didn't have the Dreamland sauce on them, which I should have done, but you kind of took the whole cup.
You can ask for more sauce.
Yeah, but that would have taken a while. Actually, it wouldn't have taken a while at all.
All right, we'll take a break, come back with Aaron Suttles to talk Alabama wide receiver depth next. Well, welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. I'm going to welcome in Aaron Suttles now, TideSports.com. Aaron, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, Cole. How are you, man?
Doing well. What is this news on Robert Foster's incident on a dirt bike, being struck by a car, tell you about, I guess, just his standing within Nick Saban's roster heading into the season?
I don't want to make too much of it or read too much into it, but I think it's fair to say stuff like this is why decision-making is probably what has not led to Robert Foster having an impact on the field for Alabama in his career. During his time in Tuscaloosa, you know, he was poised in 2015 to have a really big year. And he was off to a pretty good start when he really hurt his shoulder in that Ole Miss game, and then Calvin Ridley took it the rest away from there, and Robert Foster really hasn't been heard or seen from since. And I asked Nick Saban about Robert Foster this spring if he could have a role on this team, and basically Nick Saban said we need him to have a role on this team. He's too talented in the vertical passing game not to, and we saw that during A-Day. He ran a go route, and Jalen Hurts hit him for a 65-yard touchdown. So he's got talent. It's just the decision-making with Robert Foster that's led him to there. And I'm not going to put – I don't know the full situation with what happened with the dirt bike, but luckily for him, it's not an injury that's going to affect his quality of life going forward. He got some stitches in his back, and he should be fine. But this happened at the football complex, Cole. You've been there. It's a circle, and it's a really one way only. So bizarre how this happened.
Yeah, I agree with that. Aaron Suttles joining us on the phones. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron Suttles, covers Alabama for TideSports.com. That position in particular is intriguing to me because we all believe that Calvin Ridley is one of the best receivers in the SEC, if not the nation. He'll be the number one. But with this new offense, and I suspect Daboll wanting to push the ball down the field more vertically as opposed to some of the horizontal pass game that Lane Kiffin enjoyed, how critical is it that Alabama find a number two, a number three opposite Ridley to really be able to make this offense go?
Well, it's important, quite frankly. And you know, when Ardarius Stewart chose to go to the NFL, they lost the probably toughest wide receiver. And you know this, they lost their best downfield blocker. I mean, Calvin Ridley's good, but he's not as physical as presence as Ardarius. Ardarius was a very tough wide receiver. Would go up and get the ball, was not afraid to go over the middle, and he was great blocking as well. So, you know, they really like Jerry Jeudy. If you watched A-Day, there's plenty of proof why they like him so much. He's a guy that can win balls, 50-50 balls. He's a physical guy too. And he just continues that South Florida, Alabama receiver that they've had, you know, since 2012 with Amari Cooper and then Calvin Ridley and now Jerry Jeudy. So he's one they really like. You know, I've heard good things about T.J. Simmons. Is a guy that had gotten buried on the depth chart with Lane Kiffin last year and Billy Napier and kind of making his way back now. I still believe Robert Foster can have a role on this team, especially on the outside as a vertical threat, as you mentioned. What I'm really fascinated about learning about Brian Daboll is how he uses the running back for the passing game. You know, New England is kind of famous for getting their running backs matched up one-on-one with a linebacker and creating that matchup. And Alabama's got plenty of running backs, and they got a few that are really good catching the ball. So I want to see how he uses them in the passing game. But as far as pure wide receivers, they got a lot of talent, but not a lot of experienced talent.
Do you expect more two-back sets from Brian Daboll this fall?
I wouldn't be surprised. I honestly wouldn't. I'm just the way that New England uses that offense. Now, Nick Saban says they're not going to go back to the days of 3 yards in a cloud of dust with the running backs, and I believe that to be true. But there's just too many big physical running backs, and they got the capability of, depending on how the offensive line shakes out, to go back to more of a power running game. I don't think that means they're going to scrap the pace that they run with or sometimes even the spread. But I do think when they need to, they're going to be able to line up and run the football. I guess we'll get to see that right out of the gate against Florida State. But I just think there's too many running backs not to utilize them. And I think Brian Daboll is pretty creative in how he does that. So that's one of the questions I'm looking forward to seeing in September is how they kind of employ all these running backs.
What's the latest? And Aaron Suttles with us at TideSports.com. Follow him on Twitter at Aaron Suttles. What's the latest you're hearing, I guess, coming out of spring just on the right side of that offensive line and how it's shaping up?
Well, I think four of the five spots are in pretty good position where they want the four guys that they have, being Jonah and Ross Pierce-Baker, Bradley Bozeman, and I think they want Lester Cotton to win a position. As far as right guard, I think if he could lose the weight,
I think they would really like Deontay Brown to get a crack there. But it's not just losing the weight. He's got to have the conditioning to play 60 minutes of football. And we'll see how seriously he took that this offseason, if he got the message and dropped some weight, because he's a guy that's very powerful and can create some movement there at right guard. That's one of the key questions, because it was just a revolving door there last year, and they never really could get that position settled. And they got plenty of candidates, but it just, I think they thought Alex Leatherwood might come in and compete. He was even talk about him going to guard. He came in a little heavy as a freshman, so a lot of guys to choose from. But I honestly think that if Deontay Brown could lose the weight, they're really fascinated by what he might be able to do at right guard.
Visiting with Aaron Suttles, TideSports.com. Always appreciate your time. When you think about this team, and we talked with Barrett Slee about it a little bit earlier, that opener against Florida State is not going to be one that is really much of a testing ground or proving ground, because they're not going to have time for that, because it's going to be a pretty good football team. But what are you watching early on for this team? What positions, what position groups, maybe even if it's a style of play from Brian Daboll question? I mean, what are the first few things you want to see from Alabama against Florida State that will answer some bigger questions for you going into this season?
That's a great question, and I've thought about this, and it's kind of cheating. It's not really one area. There's a couple. One I've mentioned, most people are going to look at Alabama's front seven, and that's where the question marks are going to lie, because they've lost so many talented defenders from the front seven from a year ago, particularly middle linebacker. I'm kind of the belief that Rashawn Evans is going to take the next step in his development, and he's an uber-talented player. He's fast enough to go sideline to sideline. The only question with Rashawn, even though he's a very physical, very tough player, is can he shed blocks? He's been an outside linebacker for most of his career. And I do think, even on third downs, they might move him outside some this year, kind of like what they did with Dylan Lee a couple of years ago. So middle linebacker is a question for me. I mean, I like Sean Deon Hamilton, but he's coming off a torn ACL. So there's some question marks there. And then I go back to running back, just because of Daboll, how he's going to use them. And then how are they going to – what's the rotation? Is it going to be Bo Scarborough and Damien Harris? Where does Josh Jacobs fit in? And then you've got the talented Najee Harris and Brian Robinson, who came in this year. You got really six really good running backs, and there's just not enough footballs to go around. So how they have that rotation is fascinating to me too.
Aaron, great stuff, man. Always appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up with you soon, man.
All right, bud. Take care.
Aaron Suttles of TideSports.com. Always good to catch up there. Is there a question about this team that you want to see answered early on?
Yeah, what this offense looks like. Really, really, like, and about specifically as far as the team, how Jalen Hurts looks tossing the ball down the field if this season he starts off. Because, that's the one thing that sort of became an issue late in the year. And I think maybe more important to see Jalen Hurts' development in the passing game later in the season, see if his body held up to it, to see if he wasn't getting fatigued last year, if that wasn't part of it. But I would definitely like to see a lot. Like, this defense I'm not really worried about, because this defense has won national championships without a pass rush and has won national championships with a great pass rush that they just developed in the last few years. So this defense I'm not too worried about being able to be effective and productive. I'm very interested to see what the Daboll offense looks like, because if it's any type of variation of what they have been doing in New England, and I have no real reason to suspect not, it'll be very interesting to see this go to a more pass-happy offense. But you got great running backs that you got to figure out how to use, and that'll be the fun part.
All right, we'll get to a break. When we come back, there's a Missouri defender who doesn't want to have fun with the media anymore. We'll tell you who it is and what he said right after this. Welcome back in Cube Show Sports Radio, 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Umsports.com. You can listen online. Also, download the app in your app store. Search WUMP, iPhone or Android. RK, I said before we went to break, there's a Missouri football player that says he's done with the media. Marcel Frazier, he had a broken arm in the spring, didn't really get to see him perform there, but did go back and study him last year. Pretty good pass rusher. Now, he's not a Charles Harris, which they also had last year, who I think was an elite pass rusher. We saw him go to the Dolphins in round one of the NFL draft. But Frazier says he's not going to talk to the local media because he gets nothing from it. He took to Twitter yesterday to basically announce that he's no longer going to be talking to local media. Frazier, via his Twitter account, saying, "I will not be available to any local media this season. I gain nothing from it. I am still an amateur. Not binded to do interviews," parentheses, yet. You okay with this, Arcachet?
Theoretically, yeah. I mean, theoretically, what he the last part of it I agree with mostly, which is I'm still an amateur, not getting paid to, right? But it's a very slippery slope when you try to become this. When you try to come out and say, I'm not talking to the local media because I get nothing from it, and hey, no one's paying me to do it. I don't have to. I'm not obligated to. I mean, financially, nothing ties me to this.
Sure.
So you guys should basically be saying what sometimes Arky says, which is, if this is really amateur athletics, let's treat it like amateur athletics.
Yeah,
let's
nobody,
take away so much of the money.
And nobody inside the Missouri Athletic Department is making anyone do interviews. That's not happening.
Right.
Barry Odom's not going to Marcel Frazier saying, you have to go do interviews today. If a kid wants to bow out of interviews, that's fine. They're not gonna make them talk to anybody. Now, they can suggest, we feel like this will help you, this will help the program, we'd like for you to do this, and that's great, but none of them have to.
Listen, you didn't have to when you were at Auburn, but they liked you doing the interviews sure. after games and before them. Not use it before them, but during the week maybe. They liked you because of the way you speak and the message you can convey about the team itself. Doesn't seem like Coach Odom will want Marcel to do it anyway, according to some of these tweets you read. Like, he later goes on and says, the writers get such a kick when Missouri athletics athletes are arrested, almost as though it's a chance for them to reinforce their beliefs. Teenager with a beer is covered like Watergate. Frats spiking drinks, committing assault, and encouraging underage drinking is a non-story. So this seems to be more than just, I don't want to talk to the media. He doesn't like his media that he reads, talking about his team that plays. Now, it's interesting to note that the last couple of real social uprisings we've kind of seen happening at Missouri. And to see that what happened, with Black Lives Matter in Missouri and had the team almost forfeit a game against BYU last year or 2 years ago. And then this year, of course, having now a player to say, hey, listen, I don't have to do this. You know, I don't have to. So I'm going to invoke sort of my, I'm an amateur, right, I guess it would be, and say, you don't need me, and I'm not going to give you any type of fodder or answer any of your questions, because I know when someone gets popped for drinking underage, or when someone gets popped for domestic assault, or someone just gets popped for riding their scooter into a car, that you're gonna want to talk to somebody, and I'm just not going to do it.
What do you think about the fact that he's just saying local media? Media, he's good? Is he coming to SEC Media Days? I think some of their local media will be there.
Yeah,
you can just not talk to them there.
If, like, Dave Matter comes up and wants to ask him a question, I'm sure he's like, not him. I think it's because that's the media he probably mostly sees about covering Missouri, because Missouri football's not getting a lot of national coverage anyway.
That's true.
So he only sees his local coverage, and the local coverage probably hasn't been that positive. So to take a stand against that, which is, it's almost like a coach coming out and saying, I'm not talking to you until you smile. Let's start smiling. Why would we gotta be so negative about things? The most interesting part to me is him talking about not being paid to. And that's that he's not really obligated that way. What did you take from that?
Just the sort of misconception, again, of college football players to what they really are.
Because, again, past the scholarship, they're now given a stipend. You know, so there is essentially pay-for-play happening.
To an extent, yeah. Based on context, sure.
So essentially, you're getting money to play football. I don't understand why. I mean, it's not the hundreds of thousands of dollars or more that you get playing at the next level.
It's just him thinking he's more important than he is. His Twitter name is Federal Fraser. What does that even mean?
No idea. Maybe it's good alliteration. He is a good journalism school. Maybe that's what he's studying up on. It's just weird to me that you have a guy come out and say, I'm not talking to the local media. When, by the way, you...
Which, by the way, allows the local media to say whatever they want about you, and you don't get to rebut.
But I also think that this gets covered a lot easier if you just go say to your coach, you know, I don't want to do media this year. And I'm sure Barry Odom says, okay. There's got to be a couple other guys that Coach Odom can go to and be like, okay, this will work for them. I mean, seriously, we handle so much stuff in public eye now that it's kind of borderline ridiculous. That there's so much that we say and so much that we do, like posting pictures of our food and every single place we have to be and posting our opinion about every single thing and having to have a hot take and yell something about every single thing. When sometimes you can just keep things private. And like this, he could have just kept within him and his coach. Or maybe some teammates he talked about with. You don't have to get out there on Twitter and yell, I'm not doing it. Because when it's time for media availability, we'll know that we can't talk to you when the SEC Media Days comes around and you're not there. Or when it's time for post game and you're not there. Or when it's time for interviews during the week and you're not there.
It's
all you gotta do is to coach. Say, coach, I don't want to do media this year. You could tell him. Could tell him all this.
Yeah.
I don't get paid to. They're negative about us. Whatever you want to say, but you don't have to say on Twitter.
Right.
Hey, world.
That's what
hey,
I think.
Hey, my 1,100 followers.
1,400. Oh. I think that's what a lot of people have an issue with here is the declaration to the public via Twitter that I'm not talking to you anymore.
Good. Everybody just screams on Twitter now. Someone noticed this. How many retweets does that have? I got to click on it real quick.
I just deleted the story.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm bringing it up now.
He had a lot of responses. I mean, I read down some of the responses, and some people are really mad about it, saying that he's immature. Some people, yeah, just go focus on football. I mean, one guy had a great idea. Why not just delete Twitter and focus on being a football player?
Yeah, this tweet happened at 1:13 yesterday. It has 20 retweets. And 134 likes.
So it's not a huge story.
But a ton of responses.
Yeah, a lot of people want to share. I mean, TJ Moe even quoted it and said, man, rethink this. Not a great idea.
And to your point, the first response I see is, or just stop tweeting all season, focus on your job. Also a fair point.
Fair. Not a terrible idea.
Again, you don't have to... Look, I can declare all the time on Twitter if I want. I hate crying Jordan memes.
But they're...
That's just me screaming.
This
why
is apparently
this?
Because of a Missouri basketball player that was arrested for underage drinking.
Well, yeah, I think that's the bad issue. Like,
in your own locker room defending people.
Yeah, but I think he's just he maybe one of these guys is just defending his school, and he's like, you know what? If you guys are just gonna be mad that stuff that happens on college campuses everywhere is going to happen, and you're just gonna want to turn into a national outrage, then I'm just not gonna do media, which is fine. I don't want to talk to Marcel Frazier anyway. If he came to SEC Media Days, he would probably be 60 to 70th person I would want to talk to. There's nothing really that interesting I would want to talk to Marcel Frazier about anyway. And if you're local, you probably just want to talk about other things happening on the team.
That's possible.
You know, he's a pretty decent player.
Speaking of media, I saw a release from Fox yesterday that they have signed former Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis to be a part of their NFL coverage.
Same thing, just screaming.
Is this a good move for Fox, you think?
No. He couldn't bring anybody ESPN. Who's he going to bring?
No, he was checking his cell phone on camera live. So
ESPN got rid of him after a year. You know who they get rid of after a year? Almost nobody.
And guys that aren't very good. I never thought he was great as far as being an analyst.
See, I think,
respect him, and I know he was one of the all-time great football players, but he was never overly intriguing to me in front of a camera.
I think people thought Ray Lewis was going to be this guy that would come in there.
Very vocal, very animated.
Maybe do some of these motivational type of things like before the show or during the show. And just
pregame dance.
And be kind of fun and interesting. And then when he got on camera, he was not fun. He was not interesting. And as you say, he was checking his phone. I mean, the whole thing, when you sign people like this, when you sign high-profile names, you're trying to get names, right? You're trying to get eyeballs to come to your product. People aren't going to FS1 or FS2 or FS anything at this point. Like I was watching our friend Joe Davis, who was doing what game was this weekend? It was Detroit and Kansas City, I think. I was watching him do the Fox Game of the Week, even though Fox had something else on. I think Fox had the U.S. Open on, and Fox Sports 1 had the Baseball Game of the Week. I was watching him, but like. You just think you're trying to get eyeballs to your live sports. Well, the biggest sports, the live sports you have are like U.S. Open, some college football now, and the NFL.
More college football now.
The NFL's not on FS1. NFL's on Fox.
Right.
I mean, I know you want like a pregame show or an analyst show, but Fox already has its pregame show on Sundays.
I think they're just there. We've heard their slogan, "We own the fall." They're trying to continue taking steps. Do they have the Super Bowl this year?
It's
just played technically in the winter, I believe. But
technically, you would be right on that one. This is after like December 20th. It's considered.
No, they say they own the fall. They've got Pac-12. They've got Big 12. They've got some Big 10 now. They have NFL. Arena, maybe? I don't know.
They got a bowl game. One bowl game. ESPN has the other 47. Ball game.
CBS has the Sun Bowl.
That's what. Well,
every year,
47 of the next 48 ball games belong to ESPN. Actually, as in they own them.
Vern sits it out.
It's just, I don't know. I don't know what you go to FS1 for anything. Like, there's nothing I go to FS1 for. Like, I just happened to be scrolling noticed the baseball game was on.
The early golf coverage was there.
No, I'm saying what you personally go
I'm
for.
Just telling you. I went to watch early U.S. Open covers there Thursday and Friday. And then it flipped to Fox at like 3 or whatever, and I flipped over with it.
Fair enough.
I mean, FS1 is where I go to if I don't know where a regular sporting event is.